Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always joined by Randeep Janda, and In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. Bells and Whistles.
All right, a busy show for you this week. We are going to go full mailbag from top to tail because of all of the questions we got in the wake of the trade deadline for the Vancouver Canucks and then their subsequent victory Friday night over the Minnesota Wild on home ice. So we're going to dive right into the mailbag right away. And the first question comes in from Ashley, who writes in on Blue Sky and asks, should we be excited that we're only 2 points behind LA now? Haven't heard anyone talking about that. Is it too late? Are the standings too set in stone at this point? And as we look at the way things are shaking out in the Western Conference, and in particular in the Pacific Division, Ashley is right. The Canucks are just 2 points behind the LA Kings for third in the division. The factor there, though, is the Kings have two games in hand on Vancouver. And with 20 games left in the regular season, that's not insurmountable, right? If the Canucks get on a good run here and win some games, could they catch the LA Kings? Certainly they could. But based on the body of work to this point and the fact that LA's got a couple of games in hand, their points percentage is a 5.92 as opposed to a 5.56 for the Canucks. It's unlikely, but not impossible if the Canucks get hot here down the stretch.
Well, I think a couple of things here. I thought the LA Kings had a pretty underwhelming deadline. They didn't really stock up. And I know, you know, they've kind of been on, off for the last little while. They got a little bit of a boost when Drew Doughty came back, and now they've kind of leveled out again. I think that's attainable for the Canucks and for another team that's fighting as well. If Calgary gets hot, or if, you know, obviously Utah and those other Central Division teams can't jump into that spot. But, you know, I don't think LA is insurmountable. And if you start looking at the strength of schedule as well, they're about the same for Vancouver and LA. There's not a huge difference. If anything, Vancouver's got a little bit more difficult matchups, I believe, when it comes to Winnipeg, Dallas, and Vegas twice. So there's going to be some difficult ones there, whereas LA, down the stretch, maybe a little easier with, you know, having to play a few of those teams just once. They've got Edmonton twice, but they've got some softballs against some lesser lights too. So a strength of schedule is one thing, but I think with Vancouver, if you can play well defensively, Batch, and get timely scoring, I think the special teams has to tick up a little bit on the power play side of things. It is attainable. The LA Kings are not world beaters, but you have to be consistent for Vancouver, and that's something that they've had a challenge doing this year. But, you know, if you can find that uptick at the right time, I think it's very much attainable.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, to ultimately answer Ashley's question, I think the reason that more people aren't talking about this is because of those two games in hand. So if at some point the Kings make up those games in hand and don't extend their lead over the Canucks, and Vancouver's still chasing with a similar number of games played, then it will become a more real conversation in the market that will be discussed more widely than just on this show because you wrote in. But thanks for asking the question nonetheless. Derek, with our next question, asks, historically, what has the Canucks' success record been when they've been most active at the trade deadline? Do the Stanley Cup run years align with trade activity? And let's look at the two most recent Stanley Cup run years, less so than 1982, because that's a long time ago and a different economic situation. And you know what? Even 1994, you can't really compare it to what we see in the NHL in the modern day with the salary cap era. But the reason I want to talk about 94 is I want to juxtapose it to 2011, because in 2011, the core of the Canucks team was pretty well set. They were on track to being the President's Trophy winners, the best team in the league by far. And what Mike Gillis and co. did that season was adding depth and tweaking around the edges, bringing in guys like Chris Higgins and Max Lapierre, who ultimately ended up being big parts of the playoff run, but in depth roles. And that was going to be one of the best teams in the league anyway. They might have gone on a deep playoff run without those additions, but those guys were added around the edges. Compare that to 1994, where Pat Quinn made some major trades that season to essentially completely change the complexion of that group. And it was a bunch of new faces that had been acquired that season that were a part of their run to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. So all of this to say, Randeep, I don't know if there's a correlation between lots of movement and doing well or no movement and doing poorly or vice versa or however you want to look at it. It all depends on the situation you're in with that individual team at that individual time.
Yeah, it's about diagnosing what your team is. And I think, you know, mentioning Pat Quinn in 94, when he brought in Jeff Brown, Brett Hedekin, Nathan Lafayette, obviously added a layer of depth to his team that paid dividends, right? And, you know, overall, though, like, that's a Canucks evaluation. Let's look at it from a NHL evaluation. Over the last 10 years, and this is according to Sportsnet stats, the eventual Stanley Cup champion has made an average of 1.2 trades on trade deadline day. So not very active, right? You make generally a move that a slight tinker here, or maybe you make a couple of deals where you're adding depth. And I think, in my opinion, the best trade that was made over the last decade, maybe even if we go shorter, 5 years, was Ivan Barbashev from the St. Louis Blues to the Vegas Golden Knights, where they didn't make huge, massive deals, you know, on that deadline, except that deal, but it was the perfect type of player. So I don't think volume has a lot to do with it. I think it's about fit, kind of like that 94 team where you picked up a puck-moving defenseman in Brett Hedekin. You picked up a solid defenseman all around with a booming shot in Jeff Brown, and they gave you that extra boost. Similarly with Vegas a couple of years ago when they were able to pick up Barbashev, and he gave them the hard skill that they needed in the playoffs. So I don't think it's about volume. I think it's if you get the right one, that can sometimes make the difference.
It certainly can, and that's how you look at 2011, right? They didn't make a ton of trades. They didn't go out and hit a home run, but Chris Higgins and Max Lapierre were the exact guys they needed to complement the group they had, and ultimately that led them all the way to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final that year. Our next question comes in from Cordova Bay on Twitter, who asks, by not trading assets that may leave the team for nothing, what message is that sending to the fans? What's the plan? Ticket prices are increasing for next season, and average fans are already getting squeezed. The fans want answers. And my interpretation of the way the Canucks operated at the trade deadline is ultimately the priority for this organization is to make the playoffs this season. That's why you would hold on to a Brock Besser or a Pugh Suter. And, you know, we had another question that I'm not going to read asking about Patrick Alvin lying to the media about the value for his players. I don't think we can definitively say that he was lying to the media. I understand if people have that opinion based on the value of some of the other players out there, but ultimately, we have to take him at his word. He's the one in the negotiations. We're not. I understand the frustration of them not moving on from these players, but ultimately, they don't want to punt on the playoffs. They don't want to punt on, you know, an opportunity to get into the postseason. And even if they're not expected to go on a run like they did last year, get some good experience in the postseason for some of their young players, like defenseman Elias Pettersson, like Jonathan Lekkermäki, just as a couple of examples. So they are looking in the short term right now about making the playoffs. And then based on how they do chasing a playoff spot, whether they get in, what kind of performance they can have if they get in, and then looking forward to the offseason, I think we're going to grade this trade deadline on a variety of factors. One of them is how successful they are this year. Another is what happens with those assets, because there is still a chance that they extend Brock Besser. There is still a chance that they extend Pugh Suter or Derek Forbert. So I understand now looking at it going, you're risking letting all these guys walk for nothing without accruing anything just to chase a playoff spot this year. But I think this situation is a lot more complex than maybe most fans assume it is. And it's not a foregone conclusion that all of those guys are going to walk out the door. Now, while I've said all of that, I will also say that if they miss the playoffs and if those guys do walk, then this trade deadline will be a bad look on the organization. But until we see how the events of the rest of the season play out, and ultimately if they're successful in their goal, I'm going to wait to judge them on this deadline until we know the rest of the story.
Yeah, there's a couple of things to add there. And I think one of the things that I'll add is that Quinn Hughes plays a big factor here, right? We've talked a lot about this guy wanting to play despite having, what, three injuries this year. He even talking, you know, we heard Patrick Alvin and Rick Tocchet saying, hey, if he could play right now, he would. And he wants to, but, you know, you have to play the smart approach here. This is a guy that is giving his all for this team to make the playoffs. So your captain is leaning in that direction. He wants, you know, to be in the playoffs. That's really important for this organization because the next 2 years, Batch, is Quinn Hughes' watch, right? As it pains me to say it, but that's the reality here where you're essentially saying the organization has to have a similar mentality to the captain. And of course, as a management team, you have to look big picture. But in the big picture, it is probably their best interest to say, all right, if our leadership group thinks we can do something in the playoffs or make the playoffs, with these groups of players that, let's be honest, and Patrick Alvin said it, that the value that they're looking for wasn't out there. Whether you believe it or not, if that is the case, if you need good players to compete for a playoff spot, if your captain wants to go for the playoffs and wants to play, this is the reality of the situation. You and I can disagree with it. I had shared my thoughts on last week's podcast. I think if a deal was not done with Brock Besser, an extension, I think you have to move him. Obviously, that didn't happen, but the market also dictates what you're able to do and not. But I think a big part of this is also, you know, with Quinn Hughes, you also want to say we're not taking a step back. We believe in this team and we believe in you. So it's kind of that line you have to kind of tread on if you're management to say we're near the playoffs. If they were down and out and if they were a bottom feeder in the conference, there's no discussion here. But the fact that they're currently at the time of recording in a playoff spot, you do have to kind of keep an eye on to your leadership group and say, all right, you know, here's our long-term path. But in the short term, there is a want from the organization and the players to go for the playoffs. And I think that's why this makes it a little bit more of a challenging discussion internally, rather than just saying, hey, be a seller. No management team wants to be a seller. And I can guarantee you no player wants to be a seller either.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to your point about the Quinn Hughes situation and looking at the next couple of years, I know it was frustrating for a lot of fans that the Canucks weren't more aggressive at this trade deadline. But if they want to retool this team and get it back to being more of a competitor in order to convince Quinn Hughes that this is where he should play long term, then they're going to have to be very aggressive going forward. So as much as this deadline might have left you wanting and, you know, we might look back on it and say, oh, there were some assets they could have got value for that ultimately they let walk out the door, don't be surprised at all if they are incredibly aggressive, both in free agency and on the trade market this summer, to retool this team to try and get them back to being close to or at the level of the team we saw last year that won the Pacific Division and pushed the Oilers to Game 7 in the second round, because that clock that you mentioned for Quinn Hughes is ticking on this organization, that if they want to keep him, if they want to extend him, if they want to prove to him that this is a place that he should want to play for the majority of his career, if not the rest of his career. Jim Rutherford was quoted in the Globe and Mail earlier this season saying they want to make him a Canuck forever, then they're going to have to get to work, and they're going to get to work soon, and I expect them to do that as soon as this offseason.
No doubt, and Batch, the other side, and you know, I think it comes down to making the playoffs. Obviously, that's a bet that this management group has, you know, they want to go for it. So yeah, you know, there's going to be, if they make it, I think that's a valuable experience, and the players, that's what they're aiming for. If they don't, that's obviously a very different discussion, because you know, that's where the asset management conversation comes in. So there's skin in the game, both for the players. Of course, they're playing for the playoffs, but I think for management as well, because you've selected a path here and the playoffs are that much more important now.
So we'll see how things go with the stretch run, and I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot and answer lots of questions from listeners going forward. Next question from Jim, as we stick with some of the analysis of the trade deadline. He asks, why did they accrue cap space to do nothing with it? What was the point of that entire charade? Such a bad look. And he says on ownership, although I don't think it's fair to make that jump. The way I look at the accrual of cap space is, coming into the season, this team was operating under the assumption that they would be able to build on a very strong year last year. Now, for a variety of reasons, that didn't happen. Whether it was Demko's injury, whether it was Pettersson's struggles, whether it was Miller being traded, Dakota Joshua missing the start of the season with his cancer diagnosis. I'm not going to list everything that's happened this year. It would take the whole show. So they came into the season operating like a contender, and ultimately have had to pivot. And as we already talked about, if we're going to take Patrick Alvin at his word, and again, I know I can hear some listeners screaming at their radios or their podcast listening devices or whatever you tune into us on, your electric toaster, whatever it might be, that, you know, if you don't believe Patrick Alvin, that's fine. But in our role, in our position, I think we have to take him at his word until we have concrete information to the contrary. So, you know, it sounded like Alvin wanted to be active. He talked about saying to Brock Besser's agent that unfortunately they weren't going to find a trade here. So do I think Alvin wanted to make moves? Absolutely, I do. Do I think that they would have been willing to weaponize some of that cap space either by acquiring players that made sense within the context of what they're trying to do here, or in terms of maybe taking some bad money on to help facilitate trades and get assets in the middle of some of those deals? Sure, I think they would have absolutely been open to that. But again, you can only do what the market presents you, right? Like, I can absolutely want to, you know, in my younger single days, let's say, Randy, I absolutely would have wanted to date a supermodel. But a supermodel has to want to date me, and that was never going to happen. So,
well, you never asked Adriana Lima to ask on a date?
No, I didn't. Okay. Maybe I should have. You never know. You don't step up to the plate and take a swing. You never know what would have happened. But all joking aside, right? Like, you can understand the analogy here. Like, you can have a desire to use that cap space. You can want to do it. But if the opportunity doesn't present itself, then that's what happens. And going forward here, I don't think this is an indication. I know some fans want to interpret this as an indication that the organization doesn't want to invest in the team or doesn't want to spend. As I already said, I think they're going to be aggressive this summer, and I think they will push to spend towards the elevated salary cap because they want to get back to being a contender. They want to be a competitive team, and they want to prove to Quinn Hughes that they can do that.
Yeah, a couple of things on that front. One is that there were a lot of teams with deadline cap space, and some of those teams are teams that are, you know, not in the playoffs. The Pittsburgh Penguins, willing to retain salary. Chicago Blackhawks, they've done that. Buffalo Sabres had a lot of deadline space. So the Canucks were one of many teams. In previous years, you know, there were teams that were really up against the upper limit, and there were some teams that, maybe one or two teams that had space and nobody else did. This year is different. There's a lot of teams with space. So, you know, I don't know if teams with deadline space had the same amount of leverage as previous years. The other thing, Batch, is, you know, when we talk about moving out major salaries, JT Miller, obviously, and Carson Soucy, this is beyond this year. When you move out salary, these are two players that had been signed to multi-year deals. So JT Miller, we know, a long-term deal. And Carson Soucy had a year next year as well. So you're not only freeing up salary for this year, you're freeing up for free agency and trades in the offseason. And I think I understand the frustration because there probably is some moves that you could have made to add a salary or maybe add some scoring depth and potentially take some sort of sweetener alongside it. But I don't think sweeteners were out there the same way that they've been the past few years, because there are multiple teams that had deadline space. So I think the value there is maybe not as strong as it was previous years. I'm looking at July. I'm looking at June. Is this team able to use the cap space that they now have, moving off two of those salaries, aggressively in the offseason to make those trades and to make free agent signings? Listen, it takes a free agent to also want to come to Vancouver to buy into what they're selling. But you start looking at this team right now, they've got 30% of their cap committed to forwards, which is, you know, compared to 51% of their cap committed to defense. There's obviously money to spend there. And the measure of success for this team when it comes to spending and using that cap effectively is going to be, you know, late June draft week and early July for me. Could they have done something here? Sure. But I think really by freeing those two salaries up, you're really looking at late June, early July.
Yeah, and that also allows you to be more aggressive on the trade market, too, in terms of acquiring contracts. Even though you weren't able to do it prior to the deadline, it doesn't mean that you can't do it in the summer. And I know people will say, well, there's cap space just sitting there unutilized this season. But again, ultimately, you can want to fill that cap space and fill your boots. But if they didn't want to give up assets for rentals, if they had a certain value for their players that teams weren't willing to meet, then ultimately, what else can you do in that scenario? And again, maybe they could have done more. We weren't in the room, so we can't sit here to me and cast stones at that because we don't have the full picture of what goes on behind closed doors in some of those conversations. Okay, we'll take a break. On the other side, we will continue with the mailbag, answering your questions here in the wake of the Canucks and the NHL trade deadline. Still plenty more to come right here on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you as always. And as always, I'll take this opportunity to remind you that In the Booth lives as a podcast as well. So if you're listening on the radio right now, you missed the first part of the show, you want to go back and listen to it, then make sure to subscribe to the Canucks Central podcast feed. You get In the Booth every week with myself and Randeep. You get Canucks Central, the daily show with Sat and Reach. And you get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick as well. And Randeep, also, we have to remind the listeners that In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
That's right. Sportsnet 650 is the home of In the Booth, and the home of In the Booth is Bells and Whistles. Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with happy hour pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. And it's going to be a busy weekend there, Batch. The brunch is elite. And I might swing by before the morning skate just to check on my Arsenal versus Manchester United.
Yeah, and as we get into the mailbag, let's start there because we had a couple of people write in and ask about this. So we'll go with Justin in East Van, who says, have you guys set a wager for the Man United-Arsenal match on Sunday? And we haven't, and the reason for that is that I think both of these teams have more important things happening for them right now than facing each other. Although whenever Man United and Arsenal face each other, it's going to be a big match. But you look at the Premier League table, and yes, we'll bore you with a little bit of soccer talk here. Arsenal, as of the time of recording, 16 points back of Liverpool. They're not going to catch them. You basically just need to fend off the teams chasing you to stay in the Champions League. Man United, we know they're down in the bottom half of the table, so I'm not really concerned about our league form at this point, as long as we don't get relegated, which isn't going to happen. Meanwhile, we both have second leg European matches this coming week. So yeah. I was thinking about this coming into the show because I knew we were going to talk about it. Like, if I was managing either of these teams, and specifically Man United, because obviously you guys had a big first leg win, so the second leg isn't as big of a deal for you, whereas United had a 1-1 draw with Real Sociedad this past week in the Europa League, I would literally be playing my second team for this match because all of Man United's season is now focused on success in the Europa League. So yeah, it is Manchester United and Arsenal, but it's not what we normally expect from this fixture.
Yeah, normally when these two teams are in the top four and they're battling it out for European spots, it's a little bit more heated. But I will say this, Batch. From all my years of 20 plus years of being an EPL fan and Arsenal fan, there is no club I hate more than Manchester United. And that goes back to the early 2000s when both of these teams were at their absolute peak. They're duking it out for titles. So for pride, I most definitely, if Arsenal wins this match, I will be gloating about it for about 24 hours. I don't care who's playing. It could be the C team for both sides. It could be the reserve teams. It could be the youth squad. But you're right. The stakes are a little different now. And I will say this as well. I think with you know, Manchester United and Arsenal and all of that, shout out to Nottingham Forest. They're in third place. They beat City. That's a club that is all of a sudden turning into a powerhouse in England. So I'll be watching. I know you will be as well. I've actually got a wager with Bik Nizar. Winner gets the other person to basically put on the rival team's kit. I lost this bet to a couple of years ago to Bik and Dom Shramati. So I've got a little wager, but I'm always open to another one if you want. But if you don't want to, I understand.
I mean, we could if you want. It's not a hugely important match. And, you know, Man United, while having a bad season, are also capable of beating Arsenal. So I could see this going either way. So what's your thoughts?
Let's do it. Let's make it an easy one, not embarrassment. Let's actually lunch on the other at Bells and Whistles,
perfect,
whoever wins.
Let's do it. Done. Okay. We'll lock that in and we'll revisit that next week. And that is it for the soccer talk. For those of you that don't like it, we will move on to the hockey questions now. And we got a really good one coming in from intrepid producer of 32 Thoughts, Dominic Shramati, who wrote in and asked, outside of Brock Besser's future, what is your biggest unanswered question heading down the stretch? And there's a lot of candidates for biggest unanswered question around this team because, you know, in spite of winning a couple of games in a row here and trending their game in the right direction, it's been such an up and down season that it feels like there are more questions than answers with the Vancouver Canucks right now. But your thoughts first, Randy, what's the biggest unanswered question for the Canucks down the stretch?
Well, first of all, I want to address that this is a rare good question from Dom Shramati. So thanks for the question, Dom. This is very surprising. All right. In regards to the question, I think the elephant in the room has to be Elias Pettersson, and what is his new normal in terms of his production? That is still an unanswered question, and he's had a couple of great games. Anaheim, and of course, the last one against Minnesota where he scored a one-timer. But Batch, you know, what level? Are you getting 100% out of 100% what we saw from Pettersson a couple of years ago, him being a 100-point player? Are you going to get 80% of that? Are you going to get 60% of that? To me, that is without a doubt the next 20 games of the season, the final 20 games of the season, are you able to maintain that level or elevate that level? Like, this level is fine for now because he's slowly trying to get up and trying to scale up. But, you know, ideally for $11.6 million player, you want him to be a point per game. You want him to be able to take over games. So the biggest unanswered question for me is, out of 100%, how much of the old Elias Pettersson does this team get back?
Yeah, that's a good one, and certainly one that came to mind for me as well. Although I'm going to highlight a different one, which is also very important, and that is the health of Quinn Hughes and, by extension, the health of Thatcher Demko. Because, you know, the Canucks have had a couple of good games here. They've won a couple. You know, you hope they can build some momentum here and start to trend in the right direction and get on a little bit of a run to separate themselves from the teams chasing them in the playoff race. But the best scenario in which they can do that most effectively is having Quinn Hughes back in the lineup contributing and having Thatcher Demko as an option in the crease. As much as Kevin Lankinen has played very well, we've seen when he's had to play too much, that's when his game trends in the wrong direction, and Artur Shelov's hasn't really provided a consistent level of backup goaltending to this point in the season. So your Vezina runner-up goaltender from last season in Thatcher Demko, your reigning Norris Trophy winner in Quinn Hughes, how much can they contribute down the stretch run? How healthy can they get? In Hughes' case, if he has to battle playing through a bit of a nagging injury, what level can he get to? These are also massive questions for this team in terms of the will they or won't they make the playoff question down the stretch here.
No doubt, and this team is so reliant on the offense from Quinn Hughes that, of course, that percentage of, you know, is he going to be 100%? You know, to Rick Tockett's comment a couple of days ago, Batch, like, no player or very few players are 100%. They're all almost battling something over the 82-game grind of a regular season. But yes, with all the Hart Trophy conversations around Quinn Hughes this year, you know, that shows you how valuable of a player he is to the Vancouver Canucks. And if he's not right, this team, especially offensively, is not going to be right either. So, yeah, big conversation there. The other thing I will say, which is connected to Quinn Hughes, another question that pops up for me is, where is the offense going to come from? Obviously, Elias Pettersson, I mentioned him earlier. Quinn Hughes, you talked about him, but you know, you're going to need other players to elevate their game. You're going to need other players to consistently provide that offense. And without JT Miller on this team and kind of restocking the deck and adding more depth to the back end, you do need other players to elevate their game to chip in goals. So, you know, the third question, maybe more from a team zoom out macro level, is where is the offense coming from? And is it going to be, you know, Brock Besser? He needs to obviously up his game a little bit as well. He hasn't been able to produce at the same level, nowhere near as the same level as last year. But you're going to need other individuals in that middle six to chip in and really elevate their game without having JT in the lineup and maybe not 100% Quinn Hughes.
And that ties into our next question, which comes in from InfoKid on Twitter, who says, how can the Canucks generate more offense than they did on Friday, given the players that they have? And it's an interesting way to frame it, because I actually think that with the players that they have, they should be generating more offense. As you allude to, Brock Besser's been quiet lately. Elias Pettersson has been quiet for large stretches of the season and needs to trend his game back in the right direction. So, you know, ultimately, it comes down to, yeah, you want depth scoring, you want contributions from down the lineup like they got on Friday with the game-winning goal from Kiefer Sherwood, the empty netter from Teddy Bluger, who now has goals in back-to-back games after not scoring, and I believe it was 28 before that, or 27, somewhere around that. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now. But ultimately, you're going to go as far as your top players take you. So can Hughes get back in the lineup and contribute offense? And can Pettersson and Besser in particular find a more consistent level to their play that allows this team to drive play more effectively and ultimately create more chances and hopefully score more goals as a result?
And a big part of that batch is the power play. And I know they went 1-for-3 against Minnesota, and Minnesota's got one of the worst penalty kills in the league. But still, you take what's given to you, and Minnesota, you know, gave them an opportunity to score. But for a power play that is currently sitting in 16th place in the NHL, if you're going to struggle 5-on-5 to get goals, or if you're not going to score at the same rate you were maybe at the beginning of the year with JT Miller in your lineup, because you do have that a little bit less firepower, with the man advantage, it's so much more important. So we've seen in the last two games, they've scored a goal on the power play. So they've scored power play goals in consecutive games, but there's some games, Batch, where there are, you know, 1-for-4 or 1-for-5. Are you able to take advantage of the power play a little bit more? And I say that because I think we all understand 5-on-5, it's going to be a grind for this team to score goals. So within those games, that power play could decide, you know, a win and a loss, could decide between a single point or no points. So I look at that power play and saying, all right, can you find more consistency? Can you get set up a little bit earlier? And those entries, of course, without Quinn Hughes, are not the same. So it yet again comes back to Quinn Hughes being healthy and back in the lineup. But I think that's an area where you have to generate a little bit more offense. The positive thing is that the power play was running through Elias Pettersson more against Minnesota, where they're working off that right-hand side. He was confident taking the shot. He was confident maybe making those passes. He was getting more confident. I wouldn't say it's supreme confidence, but that's a step in the right direction. Now you just got to find that consistency.
Our next question in from Woodrow, the eligible bachelor, who asks, will Thatcher Demko return to play during this current homestand? And it's a bit of a different homestand. They've got two more games at home, then they've got a one-game road trip to Calgary on Wednesday, and then three more games at home after that. So I assume that Woodrow's talking about the next six games as opposed to the next two games, because I think it's pretty clear that we shouldn't expect Demko back on Sunday against the Stars, and I wouldn't expect him back Tuesday against the Canadiens either. He has yet to practice with the team. He has been skating on his own, but even then, Rick Tocchet spoke in the last couple of days about them having a scheduled day off the ice for Demko as part of his recovery plan. So I'm not even going to entertain the conversation about Demko getting back into a game until we see him back at practice, and that hasn't happened yet. So for the moment, I'm going to say it's unlikely he plays on this homestand. You know, I guess there's a chance he could get in the games next weekend, Saturday against Chicago, Sunday against Utah, and then a week from Tuesday against Winnipeg before they go out on the road. But if Kevin Lankinen continues to play well, they only have one back-to-back here coming up Tuesday, Wednesday at home to Montreal and then in Calgary for what could be the biggest game of the season. If you're not getting Demko back that quickly, then I don't see a reason to rush him right now. So, you know, if you're asking me to make a prediction, I'm going to predict he does not play on this stretch of games at home here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, both Alvin and Tocchet mentioned that, you know, he's got a plan. There was a scheduled day off for him on the day of the trade deadline. But, Batch, until you see him in practice, until you see him putting in work with the team, it's difficult to imagine the player getting games. And you talked about that Wednesday game against Calgary. Yes, could be the biggest game of the season for this team. How does this team treat that? You've got Montreal on Tuesday, and then you've got the back-to-back against the Flames on Wednesday. To me, you know, of course you want to pick up the 2 points against Montreal, but is that an Artur Shelov's game where you say, okay, we're gonna go with the backup in that first game, and we need Kevin Lankinen in that huge divisional games, and then there's not much of a reprieve. You've got another back-to-back on the weekend, so you've got Chicago and Utah, another team that's chasing Vancouver. So, you know, both of those games, the Calgary and Utah, if I look at that, that looks like a Kevin Lankinen duo or a set of games to me. But with Thatcher Demko, we'll have to wait and see. Until we see him in practice, it's a very difficult prediction to make.
Next question comes in from Bo, who asks, as of now, is it likely that the Canucks re-sign Brock Besser? And I would say as of now, based on the fact that Besser wasn't moved prior to the deadline, based on the tone of Patrick Alvin's media availability when asked about Besser after the deadline on Friday, I would be leaning towards it's unlikely that they sign him. Now, does that mean he for sure walks in free agency? No, it doesn't. Could the Canucks and Besser's camp meet in the middle when they have a little bit more time to sit down and have these conversations without the looming specter of the trade deadline? Sure. And Besser, we know, likes the city, likes the fan base, loves Vancouver, wants to be here. So is there a deal to be done there? Yes, I think there is. But right now, I would bet against it in terms of the stance that the organization has taken in relation to Brock Besser.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that front because, yeah, the type of conversation that was coming from Patrick Alvin, it wasn't, even though he said that, you know, him and Besser's agent are close and they continue to have conversations, it didn't seem like, oh, yeah, you know, we've got a really good idea of what both sides want and we're inching closer. It was more of a, yeah, we're talking, but there's also some limitations. And the overall conversation of Brock Besser's value in the trade market also implies that there are some limitations maybe in the how much you want to pay him, right? Like, I think some people rather astutely were saying, is Patrick Alvin trying to bring down the price for a Brock Besser? And the comment about producing in the playoffs and, you know, players that got traded were playoff producers, that's the one that stuck out to me. So we'll see, Batch. I'm not sure, you know, what the scheme or the strategy is from the Canucks perspective. But if I had to make a guess, I would lean towards no right now. And at some point, if you're a player now with leverage, because Brock Besser does have that leverage. We've talked a lot about the Canucks, you know, do they want this player at what price? Now the pendulum swings the other way to say, all right, you know, Brock Besser can at some point start talking to 31 other teams. That will probably drive the price up a little bit. That might give him not 8-year term, but he's still able to, at some point when the season is over, explore other options. So I think the more leverage a player has in the situation, you start to see what's on the other side of the fence. All right, maybe is this situation better for me? You start exploring the dollars that the UFA market brings, and generally those are higher. So I think not only from the Canucks perspective, I just think anytime you start just kind of peeking over to UFA and what that could look like, and then it just becomes, you know, the player has leverage, and that's power. And we'll see how it goes. It's not based on, you know, any conversations or any intel on Besser's camp, but I think that's a hard thing to give up when all of a sudden you're starting to see maybe a little bit more money and you start to feel wanted by other teams potentially.
Our next question comes in from at Nux1212 on Twitter, who asks, how do you think the players feel? Relieved that nobody was traded? Cheated that the team didn't bring in help? Extra motivated to show this group can win? Do you think some of the players wish the organization would have traded players for picks? Now, one thing I can tell you without a doubt from having talked to many players over the years is that none of them wish the organization would have traded players for picks. Players in the NHL do not care about draft picks. They care about the team they are playing on right now. So I think from talking to a couple of guys post-game last night, there was definitely some relief that nobody was traded. I haven't seen evidence of players feeling cheated that they didn't bring in help. I do think everyone in that dressing room is extra motivated to show that this group can win and prove some of their doubters wrong. But the one thing I'll say for sure, Randeep, and I guarantee you'll agree with me on this, is none of them are going, oh, I wish we got a second round pick for Pew Suter. Like, none of them will feel that way about the way this deadline was handled.
No, players want to win now, and a second round pick does not help with that. A third round pick doesn't. A first round doesn't either. So, you know, unless you flip it and bring in a Filip Hronek type like the Canucks did, but players don't think that way. When it comes to the relief, absolutely. You're playing stress-free to a certain extent. You can focus on the sport of hockey, something that they've given their entire, you know, basically their childhood and until now, that's what they focused on. In terms of bringing in help, listen, you make your own help in the NHL. Last year, this management team saw the potential. They brought in Zadorov. They brought in Elias Lindholm. And there was a real momentum with the group. This year, the moves have been made. Marcus Pettersson added to that defensive group. Filip Hedl, you know, was a player that they brought in. They brought in Drew O'Connor. Obviously, you know, they're in Mancini as well. You know, there's a lot of movement in the lead up to the deadline. So I think from a player's perspective, the moves that you made, you're probably saying, okay, you know, there was some movement, there was some extraction from the team, but at the same time, you're also adding players. So I don't think players are thinking that. I think they understand that in order to get help, you need to put your team in a position of, you know, giving the management team confidence too of, all right, this could be the year. So aggressively buying and then all of a sudden being a cup contender or a team that can do damage. I think there's a realization that the players in that room need to elevate their game. There's not going to be somebody external coming in and shaking it up and really bringing that star status. There's guys in that room that need to do that. So Batch, I think from a player's perspective, they're relieved. They can focus on hockey, and that's probably the most important thing to them.
Time for a couple more questions here on In the Booth. Mark writes in on Twitter and asks, what is the justification for refusing to build through the draft by ownership, even in a retool? And I don't think that is the case, at least not with the current situation. I can understand looking back at, say, the Jim Benning tenure and looking and saying, okay, they should have rebuilt through the draft. Ultimately, though, they were still able to draft players like Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson while not tanking for first overall picks, to use some of the terminology that was used through a lot of that stretch. But in this current situation with the team, I don't get the sense, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, Randy, I don't get the sense that fans are clamoring for a rebuild through the draft. I think everybody around this team realizes that with the term left on Quinn Hughes' contract, with the desire to keep him in Vancouver, that this needs to be a retool. And even if the Canucks had traded players away ahead of the deadline for draft picks, I don't think any of us would have expected them to use those draft picks to draft players. Right now for the Canucks, draft picks are trading chips to try and boost this team. And ultimately, they weren't able to pull off a feat where they, say, traded Besser for a pick and then flipped that pick for someone else before this deadline, although we saw them do it ahead of the market with the JT Miller trade and then turning the pick from that into Marcus Pettersson and Drew O'Connor in the subsequent deal. But I don't get the sense that this is a situation where anybody around the team, whether it's ownership, management, even fans and media, don't want to see them, quote unquote, rebuild through the draft right now.
Yeah, with the Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes window right now, which is open whether this is a playoff team or not right now, it's a time to strike. And I know there's a lot of team or folks that said, hey, this was a potential a chance to reset. I understand, you know, the way that this season started off, though, there was real expectation. And we were talking about it preseason, Batch. The window is open for Quinn Hughes and Pettersson. You got to start building around them. So you're not going to rebuild through the draft per se. You're not going to have a 3 to 4 year outlook right now. It's probably a 1 to 2 year, especially with the Quinn Hughes contract situation, which could be a real conversation next year. And I want to go back in the drafts a little bit here too, because 2022, Lekkerimäki, he's playing for the team. Elias Pettersson, third round, he's playing for the team. Kirill Kudryavtsev, 7th round pick in that draft, he's playing in Abbotsford, and they love what he's doing there. So when we're talking about, you know, building through the draft, that's 3 out of, 6 players they took in that 2022 draft that are showing something at the pro level. Go ahead the following year, Tom Villander, he might make the team later on this year. Sawyer Mignot is somebody that is really impressing. So there is still movement being, you know, through the draft. So I don't want to discount what the team has done and ignoring the draft. That's not what they're doing. But when it comes to the here and now, of course, I know there's a lot of folks that want to reset or retool. I don't think you can go that far with this group just based on the fact that those two star players, you need to get the maximum out of them right now. And Batch, that 2-year window for Quinn Hughes, you have to show something here. And I don't know if any player, especially the quality of Quinn Hughes, is going to be saying, all right, make that first round pick. We'll see what we have in 2 to 3 years. They are in a slightly tighter deadline here, and they have to act accordingly.
Well, yeah, and ultimately, like, if you're going to criticize them for not rebuilding through the draft, they still have their first round pick this year. And if I'm not mistaken, as of right now, don't they have a pick in every round in the draft? Which is not something that we've been able to say about them every year. So I don't think it's a fair characterization of what's happening with this organization at all to say that they are not willing to rebuild through the draft. I think they're not willing to tank. And that's probably more of the conversation we're having here with this team pushing for a playoff spot. All right, we got time for one more question. Comes in from Sue, who asks, do you ever get tired of the negative questions on a nice win? And look, I never get tired of any questions from our listeners. I think they do a great job challenging us and bringing up lots of different angles and storylines around this team. So I'm never going to say that. And in fact, it's some of the negative questions, if you want to call them that, that bring up some of the best conversation points on this show, I think.
Yeah, I'm a fan of a bunch of sports. So when we think of negative questions and riding the roller coaster, that's fandom, right? Like, Batch, I'm an Arsenal fan. I'm a New York Knicks fan. Even though I work in hockey and I think I'm a little bit more mild-mannered because this is my job and, you know, you have to kind of look at both points of view. In other sports, trust me, I lose it as well, right? I bring the negative questions. So that is the fan experience. Not everybody's going to be mild-mannered. Not everybody's going to look at it from a macro level and, you know, have that zen quality about them. Sometimes it's going to be negative. And when your team hasn't won the ultimate championship in a very long time, or if ever, of course it's going to be passionate. This fan base wants a championship. There are people that are in their 70s, 80s that want to see a championship. So of course they're going to be passionate. So, you know, I never get sick of it, because that to me is the true test of a fan base that really wants a win, where it's not supposed to be easy. And you know what? We welcome it. That's what In the Booth's all about. We try to give you our point of view in the booth, but you know, we also want to have those conversations that in the concourse, in the plaza outside, at the bar in your local neighborhood as well. So that's the beauty of fandom.
It certainly is. And that does it for our time here on the show this week. Canucks are back in action on Sunday, taking on the Dallas Stars. Note the early puck drop time, 6 o'clock from Rogers Arena. Randeep and I will have the call. The pregame show gets underway at 5. And before that, Randeep, Saturday night, you've got Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi.
Yeah, we got some great matchups. Toronto versus Colorado, so plenty of movement for both of those teams. And then on the West Coast, Edmonton versus Dallas. Obviously, two really high-end teams, and the Central Division second-place team right now, the Dallas Stars, cup favorites. So the most recent cup favorite based on the betting lines versus the last cup favorite. Really excited for both of those matchups.
Yeah, they should be great, and we'll look forward to the Canucks and Stars on Sunday as well. But this has been In the Booth. Thanks for listening, and keep it locked right here on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.